Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
I keep being asked by readers and friends and former friends who have their politics so embedded in certain parts of their body that they can't see straight anymore. They keep asking me, why do you love Trump so much? And it's not that I love President Donald Trump. I would say, as I said before, that I don't think he has the temperament for the job. His manner bothers me. His vulgarity bothers me. But I do care about the Republic. And what we're doing now with this impeachment is actually assaulting the Republic to make up for the loss of Hillary Clinton in 2016. 8 months before that election, I said she couldn't win. I wrote a column about it. Maybe you've read it. She couldn't win because it was the year of the insurgency. And she was status quo. And Trump was the insurgent. And he won, didn't he? And ever since then, there's been an effort to undermine his presidency by the left, which can't handle the fact that they lost, and stoked the rage of the electorate to delegitimize Trump. Of course, he helps with his manner, you know, going after Greta, that little climate change Joan of Arc. I understand what he does. I don't like it. He should just ignore her. But it's that type of attitude that feeds the frenzy. They thought they were going to win the White House, continue Obama's policy, control the Supreme Court of the United States, and pack it with liberals. Okay, that's what they thought. And when they lost, their whole world came apart. But here's the problem. What happens to the institutions of our republic as the left pushes it that way? The elites, I'm not talking about, you know, the people in, with cartoon heads on Twitter who hate me. I'm talking about the elites on the inside of the, pulling the strings, pulling the levers. That's the key question for everyone, whether you're on the right or left. What happens to the institution of law enforcement, like the FBI, CIA, the intelligence operations, the media, and the bureaucracy that governs by itself without fear, like the Kemalists at the fall of the Ottoman Empire?
The president leaves us no choice but to act because he is trying to corrupt once again the election for his own benefit.
And when your son looks at you and says, Mama, look, you won, bullies don't win. And I said, baby, they don't, because we're going to go in there, we're going to impeach the motherfucker.
And so our guest today is Kimberly Strassel, who's written this fantastic book, Resistance at All Costs, How Trump Haters Are Breaking America. And she explains the difference between the resistance and the voters. Jeff Carlin is here, the WGN executive producer of the Rokan Show. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, columnist with the Chicago Tribune and member of that newspaper's editorial board. Christmas is coming. I'm working on the stock, the beef stock and the chicken stock. Listening to Kim Strassel, reading her book, and watching the impeachment theater. And you know where you are? No matter if you're on the left or the right. If you're pro-Trump or not pro-Trump, you're one place now. You're on the Chicago Way. On WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
things hung together. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
I am a big fan of Kim Strassel of the Wall Street Journal. She writes the Potomac Watch. She writes editorials. She tweets very informative tweets. And I can't think of any better person to have on now than Kim Strassel, the author of a book that you have to get for Christmas, Resistance at All Costs, How Trump Haters Are Breaking America. Kimberly Strassel, welcome to the Chicago Way.
John, it is great to be here. I am a fan of yours. Nobody covers Chicago better, so it's an honor to be on the show with you.
You are so sweet to say that. And before we got on the microphones, or before it started rolling, I was telling you that I'm terrified of having to write something, begin to write something before it ends, like sports writers. I don't know how they do that. But here you are with this amazing book, writing it before the Horowitz report comes up, before the John Durham investigation is finished, right at the time of the impeachment, and you are so spot on in this book. I don't know how you did it. How did you deal with the nerves of writing something before it happened?
Well, I'll tell you what, but the draft for that book was due back in May. And yes, there were some really worried moments as I was turning it in. But, you know, the good news is I work for a great publication, the Wall Street Journal, and it has always backed me to go do all the reporting I want. And everything we had reported up until then just rock solid pointed to this outcome. And so, yeah, it was nonetheless, it was very gratifying when the report came out to see that we had got it right all along.
When people read this book, they will realize it is not just a TikTok of events, but there's serious thinking about the Republic in there. And I get a lot of questions all the time. Are you a Trump fan? Are you hate Democrats? I'm like, no, I'm a conservative, but I'm a fan of the Republic. And what Kim Strassel has done here is take apart the resistance that led the FBI to phony up an investigation with others in the intelligence community in the Obama administration, that led us to all this that we're seeing now. So, Kim, I have to ask you, what is the resistance?
Well, it's an interesting question, and it's important that we get it right, because, you know, when the publishers first came to me, they wanted the subtitle on the book to be How Trump Critics Are Breaking America. And I said, no, whoa. I am a Trump critic at times. This kind of goes to your point about the question people will ask you. You know, we at the editorial page, we just try to look at the office of the presidency, this president, like we have any other. Is he in favor of free markets and free people? Then we are supportive of it. When he does things that are not, then we are critical. My point here is that there is nonetheless a group of people, from the moment Donald Trump was elected, they viewed him as an illegitimate president and occupying power. Think about those words, resistance. It's a reference to World War II, fighting against the occupying Nazis. And as a result, their attitude is that because he is such, they are allowed to take any actions, no matter how far out of our standards or no matter how bad they are for our institutions, in order to stop him. And that, to me, has been what's been really worrisome for our republic over the last 3 years.
Bingo. Because what has happened, and we've seen what's happened, is if you delegitimize an election and a presidency, you start attacking our institutions as well. And what happens after Trump? The issue is not Trump, either 1 year or 5 years. It's what happens after Trump, that now that the media has cratered at a most inopportune time, we've cratered as an industry, as a profession, and become tribal drummers and chanters. The judiciary, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Could you elaborate on those points and others that you want to, that you made in your book?
Yeah, absolutely. Look at all those institutions you just named. Look at what we have done over the past 3 years. Because of this counterintelligence investigation, which we now know from the IG report was riddled with problems, we have an FBI that about half of the country no longer has any faith in. That's a bad thing. Look at what happened with the Kavanaugh nomination. We'd never had a Supreme Court nomination that descended into such drama and the lack of due process, all of the sort of basic principles that we threw over in the process of that, and the hit that the Supreme Court took as a result. Look at impeachment. We just had a House, you know, it's going to vote on articles of impeachment. This is the watering down of a very sacred sort of process in the Constitution, and we are setting ourselves up to at some point decide that we're going to use impeachment anytime we want to settle political differences. And it was never meant to be used that way. These are all boundaries that have been transgressed by a resistance that feels it is allowed to take all of these steps just because they don't like Donald Trump.
When you take down institutions, what happens when the actors are gone and all we have left are broken institutions? That's why I think your book is so spot on and so important. It's not just he said this, he said that. Schiff is a liar. Of course, yes, he is a liar. But there's so much more to it when you raise those questions in context. So what happens to us as a republic?
Well, you and I too have been doing this long enough. More fool both of us. We've been doing this long enough to know that once you set a bar like that so low, Washington doesn't improve its behavior, right? We just go lower. You know, look at, for instance, what happened with Supreme Court nominations. And it was Harry Reid, the former Democratic Senate Majority Leader, who decided to get rid of the filibuster for some justices. And on the basis of that, Mitch McConnell said, well, we're going to get rid of it for Supreme Court justices. We now really have no filibuster in place for just about any level of justice. And, you know, there was a reason for having that there. It was meant to be a guard against truly bad judges. And instead, both sides misused it, and then we blew it all up, and now here we are. But you can see that, the beginnings of that happening with a lot of other things as a result of the past 3 years of actions.
Her book, Resistance at All Cost, How Trump Haters Are Breaking America, by Kimberly Strassel. We're talking to Kim Strassel right now. I find that you begin part of the resistance, and you separate resistance from Trump or anti-Trump voters. I agree with you 100%. I never like to mock voters. I don't do that. Others do in our business, and I find that reprehensible. But you separated resistance from the Trump critics or anti-Trumpers or whatever we want to call them. Why did you do that, and why is it so necessary to think in those terms?
Well, it gets exactly to a phrase you used earlier in our conversation. You said the delegitimization of an election. And I agree with you. I think that this distinction is massively important because every 4 years we go to the polls and we have a presidential election, there can only ever be one winner. And the way that the country has operated pretty much up until about 3 years ago is one side was hugely disappointed, but at the same time they would step back and go, okay, I'm going to have another shot 4 years from now. The political party that lost would do an autopsy, say, what did we do wrong? How do we go back and make it better next time? How do we win? How do we get a better message? Well, there are many, many Americans out there who did proceed that way. And they said, okay, Donald Trump won. I didn't like him. I didn't vote for him. But this is our system of an electoral college and our republic. And 4 years from now, I'll have another shot at it. You know, they may oppose what he does every day, but they accept the election and they accept that this is how our process works. The resistance are the people that had never accepted the results of that election. And again, have, as a result, believed that they get to take any action they want, and who've been trying to overturn the results of that election, whether it be through impeachment or a Mueller investigation that they hoped would lead to the president's resignation or whatever you have it.
A phrase I use often to describe the resistance, particularly those in government, you know, like Sally Yates fighting the president in your book on the travel ban, when she could have just resigned. Instead, she had to fight him and therefore try to delegitimize his presidency from the outset. The phrase I use, ironically enough, given that issue, is Kamalists. I see them as the bureaucrats of the after the Ottoman Empire, everyone, when Mustafa Kemal took over power in Turkey, there were people inside the government that would fight anything that they thought Kemalism should be, and they would fight all comers and destroy them. And I find that to be, I think, historically relevant because of the, you know, years before, centuries before, it were the eunuchs and the Byzantine Empire. Now, I would suggest that some are eunuchs in the Palace of Versailles that masks itself as Washington, D.C., but they're still fighting that same kind of fight. Unelected, fighting for power, and destroying the confidence of the people in their government as they do so.
So I love that term, because actually it's far more accurate than I think than the term that we use and that I even have in the book, which is a deep state. And if you actually, that's become a very common phrase, but if you know the kind of definition and the way it's ever been used, it's not entirely accurate, because it has always tended to instead refer to a group of people that are pulling the strings behind the curtain and actually running a government, and just they have like a figurehead out in front that they've put there. The Kamalists is much better, because that is indeed what is happening, is people from within who are fighting an elected or assumed leader. And we see examples of it everywhere. The Yates one is probably one of the most dramatic, but we've got folks all through the Trump administration. I actually have a statistic somewhere in the book talking about the number of people, and I think it was 85% of 90% of different agencies who all said that they had donated to Hillary Clinton rather than Donald Trump. So imagine going to work over this federal bureaucracy knowing that 90% of your workforce is opposed to you and everything you're doing. And I think this is another part, too, is that while personal animosity drives a great deal of the resistance against Trump, it has been combined with what is just simply a traditional loathing of conservative policies. And you marry those two together, and the viciousness from within the federal workforce is something to behold. And by the way, we're dealing with that to a certain degree with impeachment, given, you know, our unknown whistleblower who kicked the whole thing off.
And the rage, what we haven't talked about, but what you talked about in your book, particularly at the beginning of it, where you talk about the party you had in your home, and you had people, you know, left and right at your party, including one poor soul who was for Rand Paul. And I thought, man, I wasn't at that party, but I would have been that guy. I would have been that poor soul. You talk about what happened afterward was the elites, the Kamalists, as I call them, manipulating the rage of the electorate because they thought they were going to elect Hillary, cement Obama's policies, and basically control the Supreme Court. And they fueled that rage against Trump, but also hurting the country, I think, as a result.
This is a really important point, because I think you have to make distinctions within the resistance, too. And there's a lot of people out there who, you know, I think they legitimately believe that Trump is a tyrant, a dictator, that he's destroying the country. And that's in part because of what they get fed from a dishonest media on a day-to-day basis. But the people at the top who were providing that dishonesty, they know better. Right? You know, some of these former Hillary Clinton campaign aides that now run opposition groups and interest groups in Washington, Demand Justice, for instance, or others, they've been around for a long time. They understand that Donald Trump isn't breaking laws. Donald Trump's administration, in many ways, has been very law and order because of the people that Mike Pence recruited to come and work in all of these agencies. And by comparison to the Obama administration, which really was somewhat lawless and ruled via executive fiat, you don't see that happening here. So they know better, but they use this as a tool of manipulation. They know that if they can suggest that he is a threat to Republic, that they rile up the haters and they encourage them to join them in this ceaseless onslaught, which is all designed to drive Donald Trump from the presidency.
And Kim, thanks for joining us again. Speaking of this never-ending onslaught and the members of the resistance, Chris Wallace talked with Jim Comey in a kind of a baffling interview, because the facts are not on his side and he's still sticking to the line and that this was everything that was done, that the Horowitz report discovered, was done on the up and up. If mistakes were made, you know, but hey, it was no big deal. We wanted to play a clip here. It's a little bit long, but we want to trim it down, but I want you to get your reaction to this if you could. Take a listen to this.
Did you know all of this?
All of what?
Everything that we're talking about here. Did you know that in fact the Steele report was the key for probable cause? Did you know that the FBI had talked to the Russian contact and he said what Steele said he had told him was not true? Did you know this? You're the FBI director.
First, again, the report will speak for itself. I don't believe the FBI concluded that Steele's reporting was bunk after talking to a subsource. But no, I didn't. As the director, you're not kept informed on the details of an investigation. So no, in general, I didn't know what they'd learned from the subsource. I didn't know the particulars of the investigation.
But this isn't some investigation, sir. This is an investigation of the campaign of the man who is the president of the United States. You've just been through a firestorm investigating Hillary Clinton. I would think if I were in your position, I would have been on that, like a junkyard dog. I would have wanted to know everything they were doing in investigating the Trump campaign.
Yeah, that's not the way it works.
Your reaction to that, because being somebody, and when you guys talked earlier about the resistance versus Kamala and those that who just saw it as a weird president got elected, this is my personal experience, but as a president elected who I wouldn't have chosen, I wouldn't have chosen Hillary either, but I'm one of these people who's like, okay, well, then let's move on. What's next? But to hear somebody who's at the upper echelon of controlling an organization like the FBI be like, it was no big deal, no big thing. They're lying. They've got to be lying if they're coming off that candid or blasé about it.
Yeah, two things on that. First of all, it is remarkable, that clip you just ran. And also, when you read the Horowitz report, it also just leaps out at you, is that they sit down with Comey, the IG, and Comey's whole attitude is, I didn't know anything. I got briefed on this every couple of weeks. I'm the FBI director. There are thousands of investigations going on. You know, I don't have time to look at all of them, and I didn't make any substantive decisions regarding this. I mean, he's just total attitude of this was not my remit, and you know, I left it to the professionals, which is hard to believe. And that gets to the second point, which is there's some really interesting things in the IG report to suggest that Comey is not being straight up here about his role. One of the more fascinating details in that report is the former Attorney General Loretta Lynch told the IG that all the way back in spring, Comey and McCabe went out of their way to pull her aside after a meeting and tell her that the FBI had got a tip about Carter Page and that they were watching Carter Page. Now, that kind of high-level interest in Comey's part and his decision to tell the Attorney General about it does not jibe with the notion that later on in the process, he was just completely out of the loop.
If you're looking for a Kamalist, maybe the king of Kamalists, he's right there. There's one thing about the book that the future, the next book that you write, I want to have, all right, because I'm just assigning one because that's easy. You know, I can do that. I can assign you books. You've already written
that
two
makes
great
me,
ones.
Like I have a little tear coming out of one side of my eye now.
Right, right. And this is the book that I would like to see about Susan Rice sitting in the White House 20 minutes after Trump is inaugurated, writing herself a memo like a CYA memo about how everything was done in a meeting with Comey, Obama, Biden, Clapper, Brennan. And it's all done by the book. Everything was done by the book. And I find that to be just as, I'm not, on the Potomac. I'm not in the halls of power. I'm just, a street reporter seeing greasy little aldermen take bribes and going to prison for a couple of years. I do find when someone says by the book, like we did everything by the book, that my spidey sense goes off right away.
Mm. Oh, that is a hugely curious email. And I am actually hopeful that John Durham, the U.S. attorney, gets into some of this, because here's what we're missing. And I address this a little bit in the book, in that when you get into the FBI and what it did, there's really kind of two pieces to it. There's three pieces. There's everything that happened from the moment it opened its investigation until the time Donald Trump was elected, okay? And we now have a pretty good sense of that one piece, thanks to the IG report, okay? But there's a piece about what happened before they started the investigation, and I don't think we have the honest answers about that yet. The IG said, oh, well, it looks like it was, they had the right predicate to start it. We'll see. I think that there was some political funny business going on in the spring of 2016 that we're going to find about from Durham. But the other piece of this is what happened after the election, and that's what you're talking about. And remember, the FBI thought Hillary Clinton was going to win. And so I would have loved to have seen the looks on everyone's faces the day that the election turned out opposite. And it became clear that the guy that they had been, the campaign they had been watching, he was now going to be their boss. And what you see happen at that point is this scramble by all of these FBI officials to get out there in front of this and get out ahead of the narrative. Suddenly we have the leaking of the dossier. Suddenly you have Jim Comey memorializing every one of his discussions with the president for memos that he's later going to leak to the press after he gets fired, et cetera, and so on. So there's a lot of political maneuvering. I have no doubt that that went up to the highest levels within the White House, that meeting you just described. And I think I'm hopeful that John Durham is also going to give us some answers about that period of time too.
The listener and reader should remember this. After Trump was elected and they were stunned, I guess they didn't read my column of a few 8 months before, they were stunned. They had to cover what they had done. And what they did was they came up with the Russia collusion Steele dossier story and leaked, got it leaked to the press, into BuzzFeed, CNN, etc., to cover what they'd done. What's the penalty for that, Kim Strassel?
Right. And, what is the penalty for that? Because this, to me, is almost or equally as bad as the FBI starting a counterintelligence investigation into an active presidential campaign, is afterward watching the FBI, this all-powerful agency, working with other members of the intelligence community, using its power to deny the president information, right? I mean, when Comey went in to brief the president-elect in January, he didn't tell him, yes, he told him about this one little tiny piece of the dossier that had to do with a story related to Trump, and said, you need to be aware that it's out there.
The hookers thing.
He didn't tell him that the FBI had a counterintelligence investigation open into members of his campaign. They denied him this information. And one of the things that also came out of the report that I'm just astounded that there has not been more talk about is we now know that when you get to 2017, the FBI find out that everything that Steele's done, this dossier, is a bunch of junk. And yet, Andy McCabe, after Jim Comey gets fired, he elevates the investigation directly into Donald Trump, even though by that point they still had no basis of any information to suggest there was any Trump-Russia collusion.
As we go through this week of impeachment theater, as I call it, in closing, what should Americans be thinking about as they watch this farce?
I think they should be... Well, it rounds back to what you first said, John, about the republic, and that is this, that it's very easy to look at things as they come in minute by minute and feel passion or rage, or but we have to think sometimes about the long term. And again, the precedent that is being set here with two articles of impeachment that do not relate any crimes that you could find in a statute, that are so broad as to be really scary, meaning that you could use both of these articles of impeachment against any president we've had already and against any president to come. And I keep reminding my friends on the left that, you know, at some point, maybe in the near future, there's going to be a Democratic president and a Republican House, and the standards that they are setting here are very scary for the nation, and we need to be telling Congress that they need to be more grown up than this.
The book that you will, I command you all listening to get, I command it. I don't just ask you, I order it. So let it be written, so let it be done. Buy the book, Resistance at All Costs, How Trump Haters Are Breaking America, by Kimberly Strassel, the best-selling author of The Intimidation Game, the columnist at The Wall Street Journal, writing The Potomac Watch, and a member of its editorial board. Kim, I'm a big fan, and thanks so much for being here on the Chicago Way.
Hey, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Bye, Kim. Thanks. Well, Jeff, what'd you think of that?
Obviously, Kim is brilliant, and we're happy to borrow her for a few minutes for our little podcast. I love the thing, we didn't dive into her because we only had so much time with her, but the idea that there's the resistance, but then there are plenty of people out there who see the forest for the trees and realize, yeah, you know, Democrats thought they had it in the bag and they didn't see this coming and they lost. Let's, you know, move on to getting the country to where it needs to go. And
but then what happened with the resistance and the resistance partner media, where all those people were just common sense people like, okay, we lost, let's keep going and let's beat them the next time. They had to be demonized and turned, right? If you did not join them, you were cast, you were canceled, you were a Nazi, you were a hater. It all went south just because they lost an election. And I just, the next, you know, I already asked Kim to write one book, but I think she should write another, which is what happens when Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's 86, fighting cancer, passes, because a great lady, a great intellect of the left, but you, if you thought that you've seen frenzy and hatred and loathing and people losing their minds, if she passes, which I don't want her to, you will see what's underlying. Mm-hmm. Because what's underlying all of this is power and control.
Yeah, that's a scenario that I don't even think I have the bandwidth right now to wrap my head around, because it's you know, you try to think, oh, it couldn't get any worse, it couldn't get any crazier, it couldn't get any more surreal the time we're living in, but holy cow.
If you thought Kavanaugh was bad, right, just wait. For Jeff Carlin, executive producer of WGN's Rokan Show, and for Kim Strassel, author of Resistance at All Costs, How Trump Haters Are Breaking America, a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal, and the columnist who writes Potomac Watch once a week. And I'm John Cass, husband to Betty, father to Peter and Spiro, owner of Zeus, I guess partner of Zeus. You can't own a dog anymore because they'll bother people's feelings. So I guess I'm his partner. I'm his treat partner. He got a rabbit the other day. Yeah, he did. He was so happy. And for everybody out there listening, remember, find us on iTunes or wherever you find podcasts. Subscribe. Write us a kick-ass review because, come on, admit it. Where are you going to find an interview like this with Kim Strassel? In-depth, discussing not just personalities, but the ideas behind the great movements that you're witness to right now. The impeachment of a president. Thanks for joining us on another edition of the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.